Let's face it, life is hard. You know what I mean. You want to win at work, but you're struggling to survive at home. You want to make your wife happy, but you have your own personal demons you have to battle with every single day. Trying to provide for your family financially, and at the same time not knowing exactly how to protect and lead them spiritually. But do you know the only thing that's harder than trying to succeed as a man? Is when you're trying to do it alone. That's why at Real Men Connect, we're offering to do life with you. We have a unique and private program called the Real Men 300 that's designed to help you win at what matters most to you. Like having a personal relationship with God, having a stronger marriage, leading your family well, winning and living your God-given purpose at work, and leaving a legacy that will matter in eternity. In the Real Men 300, we promise you three things. One, you will never have to do life alone again. Two, you won't ever get left behind, no matter how much you're struggling. And three, not only will you learn how to win as a man, you'll learn how to lead other men to victory as well. Guaranteed. However, you can't just join the Real Men 300. You have to apply because we screen every man and space is limited in this private and exclusive brotherhood. So to find out more and to see if you qualify, just go to realmen300.com. Because life's not easy, but it can get better when you choose to do it together with men you can trust, who won't judge you, but will hold you accountable and encourage you as a man. So apply today at realmen300.com. That's realmen300.com.
Welcome to Real Men Connect. Are you ready to be the extraordinary man, husband, father, and leader God called and created you to be? Then get ready to receive wisdom and guidance from some of the country's most respected men of faith as you learn everything you need to know to go from good man to great man, God's way. No judgment, no shame. Just real men with real challenges seeking real change. All for God's glory.
Hello, mighty men of God, and welcome to the Real Men Connect podcast, where we help good men become great men God's way. I'm your host, Dr. Joe Martin, and every week we interview some of the nation's most respected and accomplished men of faith to find out what it really takes to become the kind of husband, father, and spiritual leader God called and created us to be. Each interview session is packed with practical, proven biblical principles you can immediately apply in your relationships, on your job, and in your community. Today we have with us Dan Morris. Now, Dan is not only my brother in Christ, but also one of my best and closest friends. And I say that in all sincerity because other than my biological brother, I haven't known a brother in Christ as long as I've known Danny. Now, by the way, that's what I call Danny. I call him Danny. There's no guest who's appeared on the Real Men Connect podcast who knows me better than this man. And I don't know if I need to be afraid of that or, or excited today. But I won't introduce Danny the way I normally introduce my guests on the show because I'll let him do that. Because what he does for a living isn't as important as who he is to me. But what I will tell you is that I met Danny when I was a junior going into my senior year in college, probably around about 19 years old. And we were roommates, actual roommates in college. Now, we only lived together for a little under 2 years, but we've been friends for more than 28 years. Danny, can you believe it's been that long, man?
It's really amazing when you date it like that.
Yeah, 28 years. Okay, that is crazy.
Are you sure it's 28 years?
Yeah, it's been. Yeah, I did the math this morning. but we've been through almost everything together. I'm talking about job changes, relocations, marriage, divorce, kids, remarriage, and everything in between. We've seen each other at our best, and we've been there for each other to comfort each other when we're at our worst. And our friendship has endured. Now, the reason why I asked Danny on the show today is because if you would have told me about 30 years ago, as a black boy growing up in the ghettos of Miami, Florida, who didn't even meet a white child until I was 12, that I would become best friends with a good old country boy from Alabama, and we didn't play on the same sports team together, I would have said you were crazy. Now, I asked Danny to be on the show today, not so much as to interview him, but to give you a glimpse into our relationship and a brutally honest look at prejudice, race relations, racism, and our responsibility as fathers to raise our kids, especially our sons, his son Colby and my son Kendall, in a colorblind society. All I can tell you is we're probably going to go places in our conversation most of America wouldn't. So forgive us if we're not politically correct or we unintentionally offend you. That is not our intentions, but we're just going to be raw and honest in our discussion, and hopefully it will bless you. So with that being said, let me introduce to you my brother from another mother, Dan Morris. Danny, welcome to the podcast, man.
Joe, you are always so colorful. I want to tell you a little bit about myself. I am from the South Alabama area, live in Fairhope and on the Eastern Shore. I can tell you I'm doing this broadcast this morning. A lot of stuff's going on at my house, so I'm going to try to keep it as quiet as possible for you, Joe. I know you have a professional podcast. But when you had talked about this subject, I mean, it really grew dear to my heart. But I want to kind of let you know, I'm married to a beautiful lady, Amy. I've been married for almost 2 years now. We have three children. We have Andrew, we have Colby, and we have Sarah. And God has really blessed us in just a tremendous way with our family. And I want to actually give a shout out to our Lord above for helping me with our marriage. And I know Amy's going to listen to this, and I can tell you that I'm becoming the man I am because of her and because of my wife. So I wanted give that shout out to my wife for 1 second. So I appreciate that.
Look at you trying to stay out of the doghouse, man. I love it. You know, Danny, I mentioned in the show.
You just negated that. I appreciate
it. Amy knows you love her. She knows I love her too, man. But Danny, you know, when I introduced you, I mentioned about our sons, Colby and Kendall, even though you have three kids and I have two. But I mentioned them because they were our biological kids. And we were both at one point in our lives, single dads, which is a great thing to bring you back on for another show to talk about being a single dad. So I'm glad you gave a shout out to Andrew and Sarah as well. And I know Faith listening, baby, I didn't forget you. But we're talking about what we had, the responsibility we had growing up, when I say growing up, but raising our sons as single dads. And they know about our relationship. At least we've taught them a lot about our relationship. But Danny, I know you're pressed for time and I have a lot to discuss. I don't know if we're going to get through it all, but we're going to try our best. And Danny, you know, but I won't, you know, I will treat you. I'm going to try to treat you as much as I can as a regular guest on our show. And this is probably as close as I'm going to get to it. Well, that and maybe the man up questions if we get a chance to get to it. But Danny, what's your favorite Bible verse and why that gives you inspiration?
Well, really, it's very simple, and it is John 3:16. It always has been. For God so loved the world that he gave his only son, that whosoever believes in him should not perish but have eternal life. To me, I'm a simple person. That was very simple. You know, if you have children and you think, wow, would you give your son, would you give your daughter for that? And the answer for me is no. So it makes me realize how much God really loves me and how much I really need to try to stay under his covenant and what he has for me. Even when I have gotten off track at times, and even now we struggle at times, but as we get older, we're supposed to get a little wiser. But that is absolutely the verse that I hang on to daily.
You know, and as far as, you know, you're saying you're keeping it plain and simple. It doesn't get more plain and simple than that. And Danny, as many episodes as we've done, and I love to hear men give me their favorite Bible verses. That's the first time anyone has quoted John 3:16. Can you believe that? But that's the bedrock of our foundation of our faith. So I'm glad that's the one that you stand on. Now, Danny, we got a lot of ground to cover, and I really want them to get into our hearts, to see our hearts, because man, I mean, if they could have just been with us over all these years and what we've experienced. I really think it can offer a lot of healing because, you know, we're at a time right now in society where people are talking about Black Lives Matter, all lives matter, this and that. And I know you're cut from the same cloth that I am. We look at that stuff and like, are you serious? You know what I mean? You know, I hate to go back to Rodney King, but can't we all just get along? But I think we don't get along because we don't understand each other. So, Danny, I'm going to briefly kind of tell them the circumstances of how we met and how we came about. And I want you to do color commentary and fill in the blanks because I know I'm probably going to forget something. But I want to give them the context of how we became such close friends, because I tell people there's no better compliment I can give to a man as a friend. And I want them to hear this, is that if something ever happened to me, who would I trust raising my son? You know, and now even my daughter. And I know I would trust you. And you could not have told me that before I met you. and coming out of the situation that I grew up in, that that would ever happen. But I want them to know that we weren't buddy and chummy when we first met.
No, I didn't like you even a little bit.
Not even. Yeah, I mean, we were. It was horrible. But what I could tell them, the circumstances that brought us together is, I had left Miami and I was living in Pensacola, Florida, and I was in an environment that really wasn't very diverse. And I needed to find a roommate, and because I couldn't handle all the financial expenses on my own. But I was being turned down left and right. Usually everybody's looking for a roommate, but they would want to meet with me. But when they found out that I was Black, for some reason, people would tell me, oh, I'm sorry, we don't have, I already got to find a roommate. So it was very hard for me to find a roommate. And then I noticed that, that you were in my class and a couple of my classes, because we were both majored in communication, and you were in my class. And I noticed that you had this very gregarious persona about yourself, that everybody was attracted to you, especially the females. Amy, I'm sorry I had to put that out there. And I'll even confess to you, I was a little bit jealous. I'm like, they just loving this guy, man. But but I didn't say anything to you because I was typically the only African-American person in our classes. Typically, I know I didn't go to school with any African-American males in my major. And so I was always the one who was the minority in the class. And so I didn't know you, didn't really care to want to get to know you. But we end up crossing paths when you came to the gym one day and you saw me playing basketball by myself and shooting hoop. And you asked to join me in shooting, and you did. And, and first of all, I was impressed because you could really play. I didn't realize but I knew you were an athlete because the way you were built and that kind of thing. But you were sinking three pointers like with free throws. And so, of course, in my prejudiced mind, I'm thinking this white boy can shoot. Right there, right? This is cool. But as we continue to talk, I started having judgments because you were complaining about some of the classes we were taking, some of the teachers and everything. And here I was just thankful to even be in college, hadn't made it out of hood. I formed an opinion of you that you were a spoiled brat and I didn't want to have anything to do with you. And I didn't realize I was so far from that. That was so far from the truth. But that was the initial judgment that I have. And I didn't want to have anything to do with you. And so and it really caused me to go even more into my shell of isolating myself when I was on campus, because I came with so many preconceptions and prejudices when I showed up at the University of West Florida, which, and I hate to put this out on air, but they're going to hear it anyway. Dan, I don't know if you knew this, but when students of color, since it was less than about 5% on our campus, they said that, some students said that the University of West Florida, the acronym UWF stood for You Won't Finish or You Will Fail. Well, I can tell you this now, and I'm putting it out there, that the students of color said that UWF stood for University of White Folks. Okay. I don't even know if you knew that.
No, I did not. Yeah. Until right
but
now.
We said that it stood for the University of White Folks because, University of West Florida had about close to 10,000 students, and less than 5% were minorities. I'm talking about all cultures, not just African-American. I'm talking about Latino, Italian, you name it. And so there was less than 5%. So it was typical that you would not see a student of color in your class. And if you were, you were the only one. And so that was our impression. So after meeting you, I had this feeling that, man, I don't really want to get to know any white people on our campus because they're all spoiled. They're all privileged. That's what was my thought process until we met up again after that incident and you were looking for a roommate. And I did not want to room with you. I mean, it was, I did not want to be your friend. But what I found, I learned a very valuable lessons that, poverty kind of trumps racism and prejudice. If you broke, you need help, then all of a sudden you start making some compromises. And so and you taught me into it because you were telling, hey, dude, you need a roommate. I need a roommate. We both broke. Hey, let's do this together. And my attitude to you, and I don't have to apologize now because I've already apologized to you, was really nasty because my thing is, OK, I'll room with you, but don't talk to me. don't come in my room. Just pay your part of the rent. We don't have to be friends. That's how bad my attitude was. And so that's how we met. And then we had an incident that happened, which I'll talk about later. But I just want to stop right there of kind of giving them the context that this was not on the best of circumstances. It was more out of necessity that we became roommates, that we met each other. And that was it. But then it developed into something totally different. Now, Danny, what did I leave out? And now giving them a kind of intro to our relationship. Anything I left out?
Well, I think some of the things is I've grown a little bit older and battling with dyslexia at times. I've had to deal with that. The one thing I had when I was in class and I saw you, and you always came in a suit. The bottom line is I saw you as a person who had a lot of discipline. So I believe our conversations, I made a lot of excuses for why I had the grades I did in ethics and was not doing well. And, you know, that's kind of, you know, how we kind of got off on the wrong foot. I mean, the truth is I didn't come from privilege.
Right.
Regardless of how I carried myself, I came from a very humble place with my mom and dad, you know, my dad being a worker, my stepdad, a blue collar worker, my mom, a teacher. And so, you know, we didn't have a lot. And at that time, you didn't even know I had two jobs. So, you know, there was a lot going on that you didn't know. And I mean, that happens when you're meeting, you know, people, and it's easy to stereotype, you know, the situation you're in. But I can tell you, up until meeting you, I never saw things through color. Mm-hmm. Because I grew up in such a rural area that we were just all trying to survive. I mean, I'll tell people this all the time. I didn't know Mickey Mouse had a house till I was about 12. I mean, I saw it on television, but mm-hmm. I didn't know how to get there. So the bottom line is, I think growing up in that type of environment, I didn't look at it that way. I knew that I needed a roommate. And to be honest with you, the reason I took you as a roommate is because I knew you were disciplined. I knew you would do the right thing. I mean, I knew you'd be the perfect roommate. Even if I didn't talk to you, I didn't really care. Mm-hmm. I knew you wouldn't have a lot of people over. I mean, I just knew it. I mean, I knew this is it. This is my ticket out of here. This is me finding a roommate that fits, you know, what I'm looking for. So that was kind of how I looked at it. I looked at you as a means to an end.
Yeah.
And didn't mean to, but the mm-hmm. bottom line is, like you said, it was survival. I didn't want to, you know, go back home and drive from school and, you know, being young and two jobs. And I knew what I could do with my budget, and I knew I needed you. And I'd gone through other roommates that were horrible, and I was not willing to go back through there. So I kind of sized you up and said, wow, that this is what I need. And I can follow. I can get in line with discipline and things like that. I said, I can follow this, you know, this guy right out of college. And that's the way it started.
And Danny, you know, and I was such a jerk when we met. But it's funny, and I'm glad you brought this up, because my first impression of you was, oh, he's privileged. He comes from this this nice background, and that's why he's spoiled, because he's had everything handed to him on a silver platter. But what was funny, and you shared this with me when we were roommates together after we had become friends, that your impression, like you just shared your impression, man, he's disciplined, but you thought I came from a privileged background, that I went to maybe private school.
The way you carried yourself.
The way I carried myself.
Came across as a very professional. Yeah, absolutely.
And so that, and I'm hoping
so,
that
so
the
I
minute.
Had no idea. I had no idea. Yeah, I had no idea, Joe. You came from Liberty City, Miami, and you saw people get shot.
Yeah.
You saw people steal food. No, until I really started talking with you, you carried yourself as such a professional that I thought you were the one of privilege.
Wow. And see, that tells you how ignorant we both were. But not ignorance in the sense that it's negative, but it's, and I think it's typical of society. We see, I remember you and I, we had even an argument about it, because I was telling you one day, and I'm going to get to how we end up building a friendship when we moved in. Because when we moved in together, we still weren't friends. And I told you, I didn't want to talk to you.
No,
I was being a jerk.
Not at all. Not even close.
Yeah.
Just
so,
pay the rent.
But I'm going to share them with that, what happened, because God has a way of doing things his way. God knew what he was doing when he brought us together. We came under the, I became a roommate to you out of necessity, you out of, man, this guy can make me a better person. So we had different motives for getting together, but God knew what he was doing. But I remember we had an argument about prejudice and racism. And I was telling you that we're all prejudiced and you didn't agree. And I said, the reason why you don't agree is because a lot of people keep thinking being prejudiced and being racist is the same thing. And I was telling you, it's not the same thing. Prejudice is prejudging something. Racism is staying stuck in a mindset in spite of the facts, in spite of intelligence, in spite of learning more to find out about a situation. And Danny, we were living proof of that. We both had a prejudice coming in. We weren't racist. We were just prejudiced. I thought and assumed something about you that was not true. You assumed and thought things about me that weren't true. And then we found out after we educated each other, wow, we really misunderstood each other coming together. And I tell people, there's nothing wrong with being prejudiced. Own it. But you can't stay in a state of prejudice. Prejudice is just prejudging. Danny, a good example, if they saw both of us standing together, what, you're about 6'1"?
Yep.
Yeah, 6'1", and I'm like 5 foot nothing, you know? And the thing is, they will look and think, if you ask, okay, who do you think was a professional basketball player? Neither one of us were, but they were more inclined, thought that you were based on your height. That doesn't make them a bigot. That makes them use in their mind to say, I'm going to make a judgment based on the limited evidence that I see. And so that was one of the things I remember educating you on and sharing that with you, because I see so many white people that I know who are so guarded and defensive when you think that they're judging you. I said, no, we all judge each other. We're not supposed to do it, but we do it because you're human, but we need to go beyond that. But Danny, I want to get into what ended up breaking this, this tension between us. On our first day, Danny, you end up getting sick. And I got to tell you, the honest truth, my thing is, see, I never should have moved in with this white boy. Now he's sick, and I'm going to catch something. I'm not going to graduate. But you had food poisoning. I didn't know it was food poisoning at the time. But you had severe food poisoning, and you were a mess. You were a wreck. And I remember going off to class, hearing you throw up before I went to class, coming back, and you were still throwing up. And you being a dude, again, we don't like getting medical treatment and medical attention. I kept asking you, do you need to see a doctor, go to the hospital? And you didn't want to go. And I remember I had to go to class that night, but I thought, this guy's in real bad shape. And I kind of blew off. Well, I did. I blew off my class. And I said, I'm going to take you to the hospital. And I remember taking you to the hospital. Remember, now, I didn't like you. You know, didn't care too much about it. And I've been mistreating you. But I knew something was seriously wrong with you. And on the first night, I remember taking you to the hospital. And we found out that you had severe food poisoning. And Danny, how much weight did you lose in one day? It was crazy.
I don't really remember. And you're not exaggerating. I mean,
wasn't it like 10 to 12 pounds?
It was a lot.
Yeah, in one day.
One of the most severe they'd seen come through West Florida Hospital.
Yeah, you were severely dehydrated.
Front of the line. Yeah.
Yeah. So you were borderline.
I remember well. Go ahead, John.
No, but you were borderline almost to the point of that something seriously could have happened. You could have died.
Yeah, it was bad, and I remember well that my mom had to travel about an hour to get to me.
Yeah.
And you got to remember when I told my parents, because I'm at an age where, you know, My parents are still kind of involved in decisions. I'm in college and jobs and all that. And I remember telling them when I actually found a roommate, my mom said, how long have you known this guy? And I told her about 24 hours. She goes, and who is he? I said, well, he's some black guy from Miami. He's really nice. She goes, what? Because my mom wasn't prejudiced or racist. She's just like, you don't even know him. You have no relationship with him and you're just going to move in with him. And I'm like, yeah, it just feels right. I can't tell you why. But she got to meet Joe after I got sick. They actually spent time in the emergency room.
Yeah, that's right. I got to meet your mom for the first time in the emergency room.
Stood out to me. Right. And the one thing that absolutely stood out to me is that as dedicated as Joe was, and Joe was dedicated, y'all, if you know him as a person, you know he's always dedicated, on time, professional. I mean, that's the same way he was in college. For him to blow off a class for me, I was like, I don't even know if my best friends would have done that. Mm-hmm. I really don't. And I saw him give up everything really that he had going, his studies and everything, to take care of me and to get me to a point that I could get better. And that's one of the reasons that I said, man, that is a friend. I don't know him yet, but I can tell you one thing. I'm really going to give him a chance. And I don't know why God put me being sick instead of you.
I know, instead of me.
But the bottom line is that event in my life, because I was a pretty healthy boy, but that event in my life really changed my life. And it helped me to have a moment so that I did see, wow, that's a true friend. I can tell you, if that had not happened, because that was an extreme incident.
Yes.
I don't know that we would have become good friends.
No. And Dan, that's why I said God's hand was on our relationship, because I think the reason why you got sick and not me, because you're right, you were healthier than I was. You were healthier than a horse. But the reason I think you got sick and why God did it that way is because God had to work on my heart. Are you following me? See, you at least didn't, you didn't have any ill feelings towards me, but I had all these ill feelings towards you. And even though I had a really bad attitude, my mom did raise me the right way, the same way your mom raised you. And which was that I don't care how you feel about a person, judge them by the content of their character, not the color of their skin, and treat people the way you want to be treated. And so when I saw this, you're right. And they have no clue how serious I was as a student, Danny, but you tried to explain it to them. But yeah, it was borderline psychotic serious about school. So for me to blow off a class was no different than I'm thinking, shoot, I don't even know what I can equate that to, but it was very serious. But I met your mom for the first time in the emergency room. What a way to meet your mom for the first time in the emergency room while her son is back there. And Danny, I'm gonna let them know that your situation was so bad that, you know, when you go into a hospital, then you have to fill out the papers, then you wait. And then you have to wait until a doctor sees you. Well, in your situation, they made us wait, but you were so sick and you were making so many these noises that I've never heard noises like that since, that they said, forget everybody else, bring this guy back now. And it literally saved your life that it happened. But anyway, so let me kind of bring them up to speed. So after this, and while you said that if it wasn't for that incident, Danny, you're right, we wouldn't be friends today. Because I remember after you, you know, they helped you get better and you got the fluids in your system. We came home, and I mean, it was about 3 a.m. when I came back home, and you came back home the next day, and you came into my room. And the first thing I thought, dude, you don't supposed to be in my room. I told you don't talk to me. I went back to being a jerk again. And you came in the room. You said, hey, I know you don't want me in your room, but I got to ask you a question. And then I don't even know if you remember this. I got to ask you a question. What? He says, you said what you just said on the air. You said, dude, I know you. You're serious about school. I watch you in class. I know you don't play. You're on time. You're on point. You get the best grades in our class. You blew off a class for me, which we were supposed to take midterms, I believe it was, during that time. He said, you blew off.
Yeah, it wasn't just a class. I mean, it was.
Yeah, it was midterms. You know, and you said, I know what kind of student you are, and you don't even like me. That's what you told me. Why would you do that for somebody you just met that you don't even know that well and you don't even like? And Danny, I remember telling you the truth. I said, I hear you. I said, but my mom told me to treat people the way I want to be treated. And let me ask you, if it was me and I was sick, wouldn't you have done it for me? And Danny, you said yes. And if from that point forward, we built a friendship, you know?
A very good friendship.
Then we got past our differences. We got past our prejudice. You know, I tell people all the time, there's no such thing as racism. Racism really doesn't exist. And hear me on this. There's just ignorance and intelligence. Hear me. So when I hear the word, somebody say he's a racist, I don't hear he's a racist. He's just ignorant. And he refuses, or she refuses, to come into the light to get truth. Either you're ignorant or you're intelligent. Either you want truth or you don't. And Danny, it was in that moment that we spoke truth to each other. And no matter how we felt about each other, we did unto others that we would have somebody do unto us. Danny, I just gave you what I wanted to receive. If that was me and I was, and see, you were an hour away from home. I was 8 hours away from home. And Danny, if that would have been me sick on my deathbed and you were my only hope, Danny, I would hope that you would have done that for me. And you said, yes, you would. And Danny, it would have nothing to do with the color of our skin. It would have nothing to do with our religious beliefs. It had nothing to do with our cultures. It had nothing to do with our genders. It had everything to do with intelligence and ignorance. So that was the thing that started our friendship. But Danny, now I want to go into some of our conversations. From that point forward, you spent a lot of time in my room because we had some long discussions about racism, about being prejudiced, about race relations and that kind of thing. And I want to highlight some of the issues that came up during our conversation and kind of get you to jump in to share some of your experiences. Because I told you we're going to have a brutal, honest discussion about it, because we always were brutal and honest. And we even had some heated, intense, downright heated discussions about these topics. And one of the things that we said was a reason for racism, or why racism exists, is out of fear and insecurity about we're afraid of what we're going to lose, what people are going to think. You can name the fear, could be attached to anything. But Danny, I want to ask you, you told me about when you talked to your mom about that, you know, who's your roommate? You had only known me for 24 hours or less, and you didn't know much about me. What was the initial reaction of the rest of your family and your friends when you told them that you were moving in with a black guy? And I want people to understand the context that we're in pretty much South Alabama, even though it's Pensacola, Florida. And this is back in the 80s. And so not quite the 60s, but it wasn't a lot of diversity in that region. I told you I was turned down by dozens of people because they didn't want to live with me because I was black. So what was their reaction? And I'm also going to share a reaction of my family and friends too as well. What was the reaction of yours?
Well, I think probably it wasn't just a reaction from, let me kind of take you a little bit deeper. You mm-hmm. can imagine me and I'm dating.
Right.
That was probably the biggest thing that I saw. You know, I didn't really go out and tell my family, hey, I'm with a black guy. but I can tell you, because I didn't really look at it that way. Mm-hmm. My mom and dad were very supportive, very, you know, excited that I found a friend. They kind of realized that after the sickness. But I can tell you the dating aspect. I can tell you there were women that did not date me because I was had a roommate as a black man. Mm-hmm. It's kind of funny. It's kind of not. But you had a picture up on the mantle. And I was dating this one young lady, and I brought her into the apartment, and she thought I adopted you. And I'm like, what? She goes, oh, that's so sweet. Do you send the money? I'm thinking, oh, my God.
And the truth oh, my is, goodness.
It's comical, but that was really her mindset. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, my goodness. That's why I said when you became my roommate, it opened the doors. Now, I did have my friends that I kind of hung around that I let go very quickly and just prayed for, because some of the friends in that area did have negative comments. Are you sure? And you be careful. And, mm-hmm. and you know, just stuff that was just stuff they should not be saying, and stuff they never said until that happened, by the way.
Right, right, right.
So the truth is sometimes things just pop to the top. But, you know, when you were talking about prejudice and racism, you taught me something, and it was an analogy. You said that we're prejudice and racist people both sit in the dark. Just who wants to turn on the light?
Right.
And that's
right.
What you meant by the education aspect of mm-hmm. it. But, you know, dating was tough, Joe. It was not easy. There were some things that were said that I never told you. And I was like, and I defended you in many, many ways that I absolutely, in my opinion, should have never had to defend another human being in. So it taught me a lot. And it was in the early 80s. There was not social media, thank goodness.
Yeah. Could you imagine?
There wasn't cell phones. No, I cannot imagine.
Wow, man.
I think it would have been a different outcome. I think mm-hmm. it would have been a lot more pressure. Mm-hmm. But I started seeing it. And I actually also started seeing it from your friends. Or
yeah.
what you called friends or people you hung around. And
right.
that shocked me more than anything. when I'm thinking,
and it didn't shock me at all.
I'm getting it from both sides.
yeah. yeah. And then it didn't shock me at all. And we talked about this, and you spared my feelings on a lot of things, but I told you everything. well, yeah. Because yeah. I had already known this going in, that this was going to be an issue. Now, from my family standpoint, I tell you, my mom was cool. She was like, your mom, does he love Jesus? you know what I mean? That's all they care about. If he loves Jesus, he's all right. But so my mom didn't have a problem with it at all. But my friends and my, you know, extended family members, they were more concerned about my safety. And they didn't have, you know, I heard some jokes from some of my friends at school about, you know, about Joe, you know, don't go bungee jumping with him because he'll put the rope on the wrong end, you know, that stupid stuff like that. No, but, and they were just teasing anyway, because some of those guys became some of your good friends, which was the craziest
thing. They really did. That's very true.
That was, Danny, I got to tell you, that was the craziest thing to me, that my friends became closer to you than they were to me. You know, and so, but once they got, but yet they didn't know that until they got to meet you, and they didn't get to meet you until they met you through me. But I'll tell you, it was more so out of concern for my safety, because here I was living in an environment that was predominantly white, and now I'm living with a roommate who's white, who probably has a lot of white friends. And so they were concerned about my safety, but I assured them that you were safe. And if they met you, they will be fine with you after they met you. So that, but it was that fear and insecurity, fear of safety, insecure about what other people will think and that kind of thing. So I had to deal with a lot of that too. And I had to straighten people out on that. But typically, as soon as my friends got a chance to meet you, they were cool. My family was cool with you from the beginning. But my friends, when they got to meet you, they're like, wow, that is a cool dude. And I will make this comment about my brother. My brother said something. I think I told you about this. My brother, you know, he has some very, how can I put this? I don't want to throw him under the bus, but some very militant perception of white people. And so, and what's ironic, he grew up in the suburbs and he didn't grow up with me in the projects. And so, but I remember talking to him about you and he was scared. He said, Joe, you sure, you know, I don't know. I said, Varsh, you got to meet him. You got to meet him. And when I introduced you to him and I said, so what do you think of Danny? He said, oh, but he's different. That's what he said. He said, he's an exception. That's what he said. And so, but eventually, slowly but surely, his guard came down. And Danny, he has tons of white friends now, but he said it all started after he met you and he saw that you were different. And that goes back to what you were saying before about being in a room, being prejudiced and being racist. We're both in the dark. We're both in a dark room. But the prejudiced person would at least look for the light switch. The racist person, they will sit in the dark and not only stay in the dark, but complain about the dark. And that's why I tell people, no, there's a difference between being prejudiced and racist. Now, then let's go on to another topic that we discussed about why racism exists. We knew that, yes, fear and insecurity, but this was a big one, was anger and hostility. And when we refer to anger and hostility, we're talking about the past, something that happened to people in the past, and then now they hold this against every person of that same color, that same gender, that same religion, or whatever. And that's why I tell people racism is, you know, we attribute it just to race, but it could be anything. It could be racist in a religion, racist in against a gender. We just don't, you know, we call it sexist in the gender, but we don't put titles on the other forms of racism. But when it comes to anger and hostility, this is huge. And then I remember telling you when I came home one day, you had noticed that I was kind of like upset and you asked me what was going on. I told you that I had a run in with a racist professor at our university who told me that colored people would not get an A in his class. Now, I got to preface this that I asked them what would it take to get an A in his class, because like you said, I was a very serious student. And he told me colored people would never make an A in his class. It's never happened before. And I won't be the first. And when I told you that, you were angry. You were upset. And I remember you asked me, you said, Joe, what are you going to do about that? And I told you, I'm going back to class. And you said, you're not going to do anything about it? And I said, no, I'm going to go get my lesson. I'm going to go study and I'm going to do the best I can in that class. And you asked me, why would you do that after what he said to you? And I told you, because my why for being in class is bigger than him. And Danny, most of my friends I know, they would not have responded the way I did to that guy. I didn't cuss him out. I didn't get mad at him. I didn't get mad at you because, hey, this white guy has been a racist. That means Danny probably still is a racist. He's just hiding. Well, I didn't attribute that to you, but I knew I was focused more on my objective, which was to get out of that class and pass it. But I could easily see how a lot of my friends would have just either, maybe they would have, dropped out of school, dropped the class at least. And I didn't even drop the class. I went through the class. But that is a huge one. Dan, what about you? Did you notice anything when it came down to anger that some of your friends were harboring against people of color that jumped out to you?
Well, Joe, I can tell you one incident that, and it wasn't friends, it was actually you.
Mm-hmm.
If you remember, you're very creative, and I was trying to get a position.
Oh, I had a company,
and I needed this job, and I it was a 3-month job. It paid really good. It was going to help me, kind of push me through.
Oh my goodness, Lord have mercy.
And I come home after my interview, and Joe's put a rap song on the answer machine, and I'm thinking to myself, these good old boys are going to be calling me for an interview, mm-hmm. and I'm not going to get the job because now it was a great song. It's very passionate. It was very God driven. I mean, it was incredible. It was absolutely incredible. But I remember telling Joe, and I was very nice about it. Joe, listen, until I get this job, can you just take that down? Mm-hmm. And I remember Joe telling me no.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no. I said, just for a little bit. And Joe said, no, I put that up there. Just let them listen to it. It'll probably do them good. And I'm thinking, okay, you're really not working with me. and I remember you and I had that conversation. But if you think about it, my whole thing was I was fearful of not getting the position.
Right, right.
Because some manager would call, listen to the rap song and say, okay, I really don't want that up in our work.
Mm-hmm.
So fear kind of, I have to say that happened. And if I had to go back again, I can say with knowing what I know as a 47-year-old man, I would not have let fear drive me.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I would have probably said more like, no, that's a very inspirational message. And if the person calling doesn't want to hire me because of that, I don't need to be out
there. Right.
And so that's just kind of the mentality that you look at. But when you're young and you have fear but that was one of the incidents that really irritated me that, you and I had a little bit of a tiff about. I don't know if you remember what ended up happening, but the power went off in the house 2 weeks prior to midterms, something like that, after that incident. And, boy, I had to really think about it because you were sleeping really sound that morning.
Oh, yeah.
I was just about to let you miss every class you had a rough night working. And I was saying, you know what? It would serve him right if he woke up at 12 o'clock. But I didn't. I went in there and I told him, listen, you need to get up for class and you need to do what you need to do. And I think you were even a little shocked because at that time we still weren't talking that much.
Right, so, right. And Danny, you bring up a great point because that kind of go back to we talking about fear and insecurity. You talking about your fear, but you're absolutely right. I'm glad you brought that up because I got to tell you my reaction when you told me that I got angry because I'm thinking, what? I said, why do I have to change this? This is a positive message. It wasn't gangster rap. I said, it's a positive message and we're doing this and this is our house and this is our phone. This is our message. And I started getting angry thinking, wow. Against why will people judge me because of this? And Danny, I had to stop and I had to pause because we end up changing that message that I had to look at ignorance and intelligence that maybe Danny's right that yes, they should be more tolerant. However, if this is going to hinder him from getting opportunities, why would I let that stand in the way because of my pride and because of this anger and hostility I'm feeling towards people who don't like my type of music? Because you weren't a person who listened to rap music. You weren't into rap music. And at that time, rap music was just coming out. And I remember 2 Live Crew and all those other groups were just coming out. So it wasn't mainstream like it is today. So it was really kind of radical to have that on it. So, but you're right. But I could allow that to be bitter. Because you're right. We had an argument about that. And to your credit, you showed me grace and mercy when my alarm clock didn't go off and you woke me up so I didn't miss my test. So, but again, another good example of how if we don't take control of our emotions, not walk in our emotions, but leading our emotions, that it can cause us to have racist tendencies, to be prejudiced, to be walk in ignorance. So, that's another thing that we talked about. So let me bring up a third issue that came up for us. And we realized that why racism exists and is ignorance. And we just talked about it before, but there's only ignorance and intelligence. And Danny, I already know the answer to this question, but we're going to dig a little bit into it. Do you think a person is born a racist or is it something that is taught? What's your philosophy on that? What do you think, Danny?
Well, I mean, to me, there's no way anyone can say that it's not taught,
mm-hmm.
Because of the fact that, when a baby's born, it's very innocent And what happens is through media, through associations, you start developing those attitudes toward, you know, if you talk with my son right now, I have taught him not to look at things through color. Now, we're not the most politically correct family, and we have a good time with everything. Mm-hmm. But the bottom line is our heart says that we care about other people. It doesn't matter the color. And I tell him, and I have told him this, what if you were blind? What if you couldn't make any decisions? You know, blindness does happen to people. But what if you were blind and you couldn't look at anything? You could just hear the voices. You could just sense the emotions. You couldn't see the color. And but I absolutely believe it's taught, because I have seen that. I've seen parents say something, and next thing you know, the kids are mimicking them. But that's not the only thing that's taught. Greed can be taught. Mm-hmm. Hey, get as much as you can. Take care of yourself. That type of thing. It's not just racism that can be taught or can be passed down. I mean, it's a lot of different things. But yeah, to answer your question wholeheartedly, I believe it's something that is taught, and I believe it's the legacy that you give to your children.
And I hope everyone knows that. I mean, to hear, to think anybody can think possibly that you were born a racist, I can't believe that if they're Christian. Because God said, I made you in my own image. You know, I made you in my own image. So God made us these shades of color. That's all it is shades of color of our pigmentation in our skin. And so how somebody can think that we're born a racist is beyond me, especially if they're Christian. But Dan, you brought up something that, and I think we need to address this, that people think, because we're living in a society now, we brought it up a couple of times about political correctness. People keep thinking, well, if you love me, you won't offend me. You know, you won't say anything that's insensitive to me. To me, that is ridiculous. And I think one reason why our relationship became so close, we weren't afraid to offend each other, if that makes any sense. We weren't afraid because, Danny, we knew each other's heart. We knew that, one, that we were developed this deep relationship. We started to love each other and everything. But we also understood, too, that we're human. And the thing is, we live in a society today thinking that if I offend you, then I must be a racist or I must be insensitive. Maybe I'm just human. And the thing is, we have to get past that. But have you noticed that too? Do you really think that people could ever really build a good relationship if they're afraid of offending people?
Well, I mean, the one thing I'm learning about myself, and I kind of, you know, full disclosure, I'm going through learning how to be a lot more as a man emotionally intimate. Mm-hmm. And when I say that, I mean just being in touch with my feelings and understanding those. And the first thing that you have to have is trust. You have to be able to create that zone where you can, you know, say what you want to say, but it's in a loving and active listening type of way. I absolutely believe that from a prejudice perspective, I really believe in my heart that it's a heart issue. I don't mm-hmm. think it's anything else. I think once you turn your heart to Jesus, I think everything else kind of takes care of itself. You can watch the media, you can watch things, but the truth is, if your heart is really in the right place and you're doing the right thing for love, it's really hard to look at anyone, you know, in that way. But, you know, you also got to remember there's an evil out there. There's a devil mm-hmm. out there. And you've got to recognize that, you know, he's out there to destroy. And a lot of times, and we're seeing it in our country now, Joe, he is out there to destroy through the media, through whatever you have. But I can tell you, as much bad as, you know, you see on television, all that, you know what? I see a lot of good, too.
Right.
You just don't see it on the television. Mm-hmm. So the bottom, we need an all good channel. So, you don't see a lot of that. Right, political correctness. I'll give you an example. There was the other day I had this lady and I said the word African American. And she said, I ain't from Africa. I'm like, okay, I'm not gonna win with this.
Right.
There's no other way I can go with this.
Yeah, if you use like black, you might get offended by that. If I use, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And I think that's what hinders us from building deeper relationships. But you, as you were saying, though, go ahead.
Well, and I think probably the political correctness has gotten to the point of crazy. But yeah. I can tell you, I believe in 2006 when Facebook came out and social media has been launched. I think a lot of our thoughts now on pages and things like that. And I'm a firm believer. There's some thoughts that we should just let go.
Mm-hmm.
Should pray about them. But we see more of them out there, and we see more of them out there on in print that you can't take away anymore. And words do matter. You know, that old saying, sticks and stones may break my bones, but, you know, words will never hurt me. Forget that. They hurt.
They hurt.
They hurt, and they add emotion, and they add deep resentment. And so you really need to be aware that a good word to someone can go a long way. You don't know what situation they're going through on that day. If you did, you might change, you know, how you, and sometimes it just takes that one little thing. But, you know, we're talking about blacks, but the bottom line is an African-American, we're throwing all these labels around. But man, the Hispanic, the Chinese, please, there's so many folks out there. And if we would just quit labeling, that doesn't mean you don't need to be proud of where you came from, but just quit labeling and quit trying to create hate. But I'm going to tell you, we were all meant to sin, I'm finding out.
Right.
So getting closer to Jesus is how you start changing your heart. And the further away you get, the easier it is to find hate. And when you get off that road, it's not a hard road back, but the bottom line is it looks like it's a long way back. We talked about surrounding ourselves with people. You know, if you surround yourself with people who hate and who label all the time, you eventually will become that. So, I mean, you have to also surround yourself with the right people. But political correctness, it's everywhere. You don't want to use it as an excuse. But, you know, some people are going to be offended. That's just the way it's going to be.
Right.
It's going to happen. If you're going to try to build trust with someone, then sometimes you're going to have to offend. You know what? You can't offend with compassion. You don't have to offend with being mean and sharp. You can offend with compassion. There's enough websites out there to teach you how to offend with compassion. Go to them.
Mm-hmm. And Danny, you know, you're right, because I think that was at the foundation of our relationship, that we didn't always agree on a lot of things. But even when we, quote, offended each other, we knew it came from a good place because we did it with compassion. And so we would speak truth. And I believe that no different than what the Bible tells us, that the truth, and when you know the truth, you shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. And it's hard to get the truth if you're scared to talk about the truth. You're scared to address the elephant that's in the room. And Danny, I'm looking at the clock here and we're running. I'm getting low on time, but I want to touch on some, at least a couple of points. And like I said, we may even have to bring you back. But Danny, I know somebody asked me and said, Joe, what should you do? And you had brought this up earlier in our conversation about when you noticed when you were dating some of the racist comments from friends and all this other stuff. And people ask me, Joe, how do you address racism when you see it? Well, I got to honestly tell you, in today's society, it's hidden a lot for me because people know how to put their best foot forward when they're around me, or really race relations is really changing, because I don't see a lot of blatant racism in my face. Now, like you said, I see it in the media. I read about it, but I don't really experience a lot of it myself, or people don't do it in front of me so I can address it. But what about you? You've been exposed to a lot more than I have based on our relationship. What do you suggest are the best ways to deal with someone who's being showing racist tendencies or saying things that are really, really insensitive? And you know, it's not coming from just a prejudiced place, but a racist place.
Show them grace. Mm. Do exactly what your father did for you.
Mm-hmm.
You're not perfect. Mm-hmm. Show them grace. May not be easy, but I'm going to tell you, if you're going to turn somebody's heart, do exactly what the opposite they think you're going to do.
Amen.
But when you show grace to someone and you really step back and say, you know what, I'm not doing this for me. It's not the emotion for me. I'm doing it for Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's amazing how God protects you and also can turn, you know, a man's heart or a woman's heart. Just because someone's heart is hard does not mean it has to stay hard.
Right.
And you could be planting a seed of grace and they could say, wait a minute, you're different. Just like your brother did with me.
Mm-hmm.
What I did is I showed him grace. He didn't just look at me, but I showed him grace. I mean, I knew that he had, you know, in all honesty, that type of a militant. I said, I'm not going to get along with this person.
Right.
But the truth is, after I met you, I said, you know what? Because, Joe, you taught me. If one thing you really taught me, you taught me grace. Mm-hmm. You taught me that, okay, you really need to step up and give and have compassion, because you had a lot of that as I was your roommate. I saw you do that with a lot of people, and I didn't know it until probably right now talking with you, but I believe I changed your heart by being your friend.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that till right now. But mm-hmm. after hearing everything you told me, I really believe that God put me in your life, like you said, and it did change your heart. And mm-hmm. I believe it changed your life and the way you looked at it.
And Danny, I got to believe, you know, because we're not going to do the man up questions today because the Spirit is leading me in a different direction. Because I think I want to close out this conversation because I really think it's going to touch somebody's life. Because you hit it right on target about that grace. I see now why God brought us together, because Danny, God goes ahead of us and he knows what kind of influence we were going to have 30 years later. You know, he knew what kind of ministry, what kind of platform he was going to give us to be able to influence people. And I can see now, looking back in hindsight, you're right. Danny, maybe I wouldn't have even been prepared for a ministry like this to be able to do this, because I'll tell you something that just happened recently. I was at a function that was actually about bringing races together, and they were asking about what I do. And I mentioned the podcast. I mentioned Real Men Connect and about how I bring these men together. And we talk about how to be good husbands, good fathers, and good leaders, and be men of God. And this was a white person, and Danny, not from a racist place. She was just and I appreciated her honesty. She says, so, where do you find all these black people, these black men? And I said, excuse me, where do you find all these great black men to interview? I said, I don't interview only black men. Like that, right? She said, you don't? I said, oh, I said, no, we have men from all different races on our show and different cultures and backgrounds and different age groups. And so she said, wow. So she just assumed that because I was a black man, that my show was black focused. And it was about me interviewing only men of color. And Danny, I didn't get mad at, going back to what we were saying about anger and hostility and the fear and insecurity. I didn't get mad at her. You know what I did? What you just said. I extended her grace. Oh, bless her heart. She didn't know. You know what I mean? So let me enlighten her and teach her. So I'm thinking maybe that's another response. Like you said, give grace and then educate. Give grace and educate. That's what you did for my brother. But you brought up something that I want to bring up too. And talking about extending grace, I remember, Dan, and this shows your heart, kind of heart you had when we were growing up, because I mean, I was like blown away by it. There was a older lady, remember, living in our apartment complex.
Evelyn McKay.
Yeah, she didn't have a lot of family. And you would go over to see her, spend time with her. You would drive around, get help and get groceries. And I got to tell you, I was impressed with that, because I'm thinking, now, I love people, but come on, man. I ain't hanging out with some old lady, you know, right? And this is an older white lady. And Danny used to talk about her so much of how great a woman she was. And you couldn't wait for me to meet her and that kind of thing. And used to talk to her about me. And when you finally brought her over, I was telling you this based on our friendship. I said, when me as a black man, sometimes I can feel my color around people. Danny, I never felt it around you. Now, I may have had prejudice towards you about certain things. I prejudge you on things, but I never felt my color around you. And you probably would say the same thing about me. But there's certain places you can go. And I've been all over this country, to every state at least twice. And I've been some places. I've been the only black person there. I could feel my color in a place where there's only maybe it's very diverse. And I go to places where there's only white people and I don't feel my color. But in that particular case with this woman, I felt my color. And I mentioned to you after you had taken her back home, I said, Danny, did you tell her that I was black? And you said, no, I didn't tell her, you know, and you found out that she had come from a racist background. And Danny, I remember your response. You were so brokenhearted because you loved that woman so much. You were so brokenhearted that you said, Joe, I cannot hang around her anymore. I cannot be around her anymore because some of the stuff she was telling me after she met you. And I remember telling you, Danny, no, that's a reason why you need to be around her, because you need now to show her that grace and educate her. And Danny, to your credit, you continue to build a relationship with her. And I think that's a testimony, not only to your character, but a great lesson for us all to say, in spite of what we feel, God has not called us to walk in our feelings and our emotions. It's to be able to share his light to other people. And I would hope, I don't know if her heart ever changed, Danny, but you were able to show her the love of Christ and let your light shine towards her in a dark place there where she was. And my heart broke for her too, even though it was kind of forced, you know, her views were kind of against me. But Danny, I knew that you are our only hope to educating this woman. And so to your credit, you continue that relationship. And so you're absolutely right, right on with that, about it's about grace. Anything you want to add before my last comment to you, before we end the podcast? Anything else you want to add, man?
Well, I just want to say, you know, thank you so much for your friendship over the over this life that I've had, and you had really taught me a lot. And I think it's incredible how transparent that you are with all your podcasts and the things that you're doing. I know you give Jesus all the credit, but I can tell you, just as a friend, you've enhanced my life in ways that you will probably never understand. The books you send sometimes, the things you do, and so I really do just appreciate your friendship. But I also ask people out there just to kind of step back when you see some of the rhetoric out there, and you see some of the hate, and you see some of the, you know, some of it's funny because there's comics out there, and there's all kind of things. You know, take it with a grain of salt. But you know, understand these are people, and one day Jesus is going to ask you, how did you serve these people? Mm-hmm. And me, you want to be saying, hey, I extended grace. And I can tell you, it is amazing how doors will open if your heart softens.
Yeah. Yeah. Well said, Danny. You know, when we stand before the Father, which if there is a God, and we both believe there is, and most of the men out there listening believe there is a God, if we are indeed going to stand before God, trust me when I tell you this, I haven't been to heaven yet, but I got a feeling, Danny, that when we stand before him, we're going to ask for grace over race.
Oh, I would agree with
you
that.
You would think?
I would agree with that.
It's going to be about grace, because when he shows us our what we've done, and we look at what we deserve, and he's going to ask us, what'd you do with my son? And we profess Jesus Christ as our Lord and Savior, and he's going to say, you are now saved by what? Not your race. You are saved by grace. And it's going to play a vital part. And then I want to close with this one statement that you made that really blew my mind, and I've been sharing it with other people, especially people who are not minorities, is that when we had first moved in together, I had told you about racism, how bad it was. And you told me in your words, and Joe, it's not as bad as you think it is. You know, I know that, you know, people of color have experienced a lot of stuff, you said, Joe, but we're getting better. It's not as bad as you think it is. And I graduated a little bit before you did. And I remember you came to me and said, Joe, remember that discussion we had before we moved in together? We were talking about how I was telling you, you were saying racism is really bad. And I say, it's not that bad as you think. I said, yeah. I said, oh, yeah. I said, well, so what do you think? He said, Joe, you were wrong. I said, I was wrong. He said, yeah, Joe, it's not as bad as you think. And Danny, you said something that blew my mind. You said, Joe, it's worse than you think. Danny, that scared the crap out of me when you told me that, because you told me, like you mentioned on the show today, that you said, Joe, there's things I haven't told you about that I experienced living with you. And I've been sharing that comment with a lot of my friends who are white to say, my best friend told me that, my brother in Christ told me this, and he didn't have to tell me that. He could have spared my feelings. He could have spared my outlook and not, you know, treat me like I was a child and say, you know what? I'm not going to give him a cynical view of the world. But Danny, you saw stuff that I never experienced, and I'm glad that you told me that. So not to be naive, but to make sure that I'm prayed up, that I show grace and I show mercy where it's needed. So I appreciate you being honest and sharing that with me, man. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And Danny, we're going to close out the show, but I got to tell our guests, we went a little bit over time, but guys, I want to just thank Danny for joining us today, for being so gracious with the time. I know he has to get out of here. Danny, thank you, brother, for being on the show. I know that you love being on the show, but thank you for taking time to talk about such a sensitive topic today. I appreciate it.
It has been a pleasure. Thank you, Joe, for having me.
And Danny, if our guests wanted to reach out to you via email, how could they reach you? Because I'm sure maybe they may have questions even after this conversation. What would be the best way to reach out to you and connect with you?
Probably the best way is just I have a email address sort of just kind of set up, but it's Dan, D-A-N dot M dot Morris at hotmail.com. So it's just my name, and I'll give it to you. You can put the link up if you want to.
Yeah,
it's just
and
sort of a mailbox that I get all kind of things through. But if you had a question or you had something you wanted to ask me, you know, the truth is me being on here today was really about me being your friend and mm-hmm. kind of enlighten people on something that happened to us in the real world. This is mm-hmm. not anything that was, you know, kind of fantasy or what it could be. No, it has been. So it's been a real good show.
Well, thank you, Danny. And we're going to put your email address in the show notes. So it'll always be there. So, and I will hope and I pray that people who are struggling with this will reach out to you or have questions will reach out to you. And of course, they can always reach out to me as well. But definitely with you, I know we've actually done lectures on a college campus about this topic. And I was always surprised that, and you know, I brought you to one of my classes, that they had more questions for you than they did for me. And
yeah,
so
that always amazed me too. Yeah,
that surprised me. So if there are listeners out there who have questions, please email Danny. Trust me, he will be honest with you. He will tell you the truth. And to all of you out there, guys, we love hearing from you. We love hearing from our listeners. So if you want to connect with us or if there's a topic you'd like for us to discuss in the future, if you have a question for me, shoot us an email at realmenconnect@gmail.com. That's realmenconnect@gmail.com, and we'll get right on it for you. And also, please do us a huge favor, especially with this particular episode, share it. Karen is sharing. Share this episode with anyone you know who may need to be enlightened or even question whether or not they're prejudiced or being racist and need to come into the light. Please share this with them. And also take about 30 seconds to go over to iTunes and rate the program. It's the best way to help us exponentially get this program in the hands, ears, and hearts of people just like you, men just like you. So until next time, I'm Joe Martin, the man builder with realmenconnect.com, reminding you that we are males by birth, but we are men by choice. So choose to be the man God called and created you to be, because a male is a terrible thing to waste. So until next time, stay strong, stay blessed, and as always, stay in God's grip.
Thank you for listening to the Real Men Connect podcast with Dr. Joe Martin. Real Men Connect isn't just a podcast. It's a mission, ministry, and movement to help good men become the great men God called and created us to be. And the best is yet to come. So if you enjoyed this episode, go ahead and leave us a review in iTunes. It really helps us to build the podcast and to reach, teach, and impact more men, all for the glory of God. And make sure you check out realmenconnect.com to get our free tools and resources to help you go from good man to great man God's way. Again, that's realmenconnect.com. Thank you for listening. We'll see you in the next episode.